Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It is Tuesday night, and it's one of our privileges that we have is we come to you Monday night at 8:30, Tuesday night at 8:30, and also Thursday night at 8:30 for Impacting Life 24/7. Well, about once a quarter, what I do on one of our broadcast nights is instead of having a guest or having a traditional podcast, I get to share a little bit of my gift with you in the spoken word. I love to be able to speak to audiences, and I love to be able to speak to people and try to inspire them. A lot of people don't realize that words are so powerful. They're so dynamic. And that's the one gift God, I feel, has blessed me with. This is, as they say, the most wonderful time of the year. I don't know if you guys are feeling now in the Christmas spirit, but just about after the turkey is put away at Thanksgiving, we are in full Christmas mode, ready to rejoice and celebrate and look forward to everything that is taking place in the holiday season. There is so much joy. There is so much anticipation. Everybody is being kind. You know, the folks that fuss about parking spaces at Walmart will soon just give you their parking space during this season. It is sprinkled with a levity and a compassion that you don't normally see in the other 11 months of the year. It is truly the most wonderful time of the year. And it inspires me because it causes people to reflect more during this month than they reflect in any other month or months of the year. And why is that? Because Christmas, for me, a man of faith, Christmas is about celebrating the birth of Christ, which is always a good story and good news for humanity. But I wanted to take just a diversion tonight from our normal routine. We are in episode 111 on our podcast, and 2021 is going to be an explosion of dynamic guests, as well as me making appearances in shows all across the country and around the world. So as we kind of put the proverbial landing gear down, and we get ourselves set to end this time with our families and celebrating and opening gifts and singing around the tree, I have been ruminating for the past 6 months or so on how I was going to develop a Christmas message for America. And last year, as you guys may know, I had a speech entitled Unwrap Your Present. And that speech focused on you realizing that there were three elements in life: the past, the future, and the present. The past and the future are two elements that you cannot control, nor can you do anything about. We truly live in the present. And it is considered almost a gift because it's called the present. And we talked about how you must unwrap your present and take advantage of the time that you have. It was a blessed speech. I have enjoyed it, given it to thousands of students, and I shared it with my audience. I've shared it with my audience for a number of years. Well, tonight I'm sharing a brand new speech. I don't have any notes. There's nothing up my sleeve. And so I want to pour out into you something for this time period that we're in, ladies and gentlemen, 2020. It truly is a wonderful life. The movie was framed in 1946. And it was centered around a man and his life. You know, they had set out to make a good amount of money off of this movie, It's a Wonderful Life, but it was an absolute box office flop. It was a flop. The cost to make the movie was $3 million. The cost to make the movie was $3 million. But guess what? They barely made $3 million at the box office. So everyone said that it was a disaster. Everyone said that it was a disaster. So why was it a disaster? Because it did not produce. The results of this movie, if you looked at it back in 1946, December the 20th, 1946, it's like, man, it cost us $3 million to make, and it only made $3 million. We're at a loss. And it wasn't until they took this movie out of the commercialized cinematic construct and placed it open without any restrictions that it began to take off. And in fact, most recently, It's a Wonderful Life has been rated as the top inspirational Christmas movie of all time. It is actually in the Library of Congress of cinematic works, It's a Wonderful Life. It didn't start out that way. The movie started out as a flop. They thought, man, okay, you guys got this good, nice, feel-good story, and nobody went to see it. It was a flop. And yet, when it was allowed to be dispersed throughout humanity, it actually did what it was designed to do. It caused people now to reflect on truly how wonderful life is. I want you to know that they thought about maybe we made a mistake when we filmed It's a Wonderful Life. Perhaps we missed the mark because the director of this film had directed great films in the past and there was a lot of pressure on him because look, you've done so well. How did you make a flop with It's a Wonderful Life? You think about Jimmy Stewart, the actor who played the notorious and very memorable character, George Bailey. The story has a backdrop in Bedford Falls, New York. And it is taken from a perspective of the day before Christmas. You know, and it paints a picture that gets us to the day before Christmas relatively quick, but there's a lot of details in between from the start to Christmas Eve. George Bailey was known as a man that always sacrificed. As a young kid, his brother was sliding down an ice lake and fell into the water. And George Bailey came running to save his younger brother. You know, from that accident, George Bailey had lost hearing in his left ear, and he never regained his hearing again. Another time, George Bailey was working for the disgruntled druggist in town, and the druggist had made a mistake putting poison in a prescription that was supposed to be delivered to a kid. If that prescription had been delivered, the child would have died. George Bailey saw the mistake and brought it to the druggist and said, "You didn't mean to do this. I know you're disgruntled. I know you lost a family member, but this is what you did. It was an accident." And he saved a life. It's crazy because George Bailey, as he now, the cameras face him as he's an older man, he is saying he wants to see the world. And the picture frame stops because this is how wide George's imagination is. He wants to build bridges. He wants to travel the world. He wants to see things. He wants to get out of Bedford Falls. But there's one problem. His dad owned a little building and loan company, a little piddly building and loan company. And Mr. Potter was on the board, and Potter controlled everything. Potter was the Scrooge of Bedford Falls. And George Bailey's dad, all he wanted to do was try to help people get a little step up by owning their own home and making it easy for people to own their home. Mr. Potter wanted to get the building and loan out of business. And George Bailey said, listen, I'm ready to get out of here. I'm ready to get out of this nickel and dime town. I'm ready to get out of this dusty place, and I want to go see the world. I want to see the sights. I want to build the bridges. George Bailey had a vision. He had a plan. He had a destiny. He had a goal to get away. And then George Bailey's dad had a stroke and died. So George Bailey said, I've got to put my dreams on hold because the board says the only way that the building and loan will continue is if George Bailey runs it with his Uncle Billy. And George looks at his younger brother, who he had said, hey, look, you go to college and then come back and work the building and loan, then I'll go off to college and travel the world. But his brother comes back from college and says, man, I got a great job. I'm going to do this. And George Bailey said, okay, I'll stay with the building alone. Another element of sacrifice. And George is celebrating his nuptials. They're throwing rice. And him and his wife have saved up over $2,000, which was a ton of money back in 1946. And they were getting ready to go away to celebrate their honeymoon. And all of a sudden, there's a run on the banks. There's a run on the money. And all of the people that George Bailey and the building alone had been supporting and helping those folks, now all their money's gone. And they're running to the banks and they're standing outside a building alone in the rain. And George Bailey's in the car with his wife, getting ready to leave and go on his honeymoon. And he stops. He looks back. He says, man, I can't do this. I can't leave those people. He runs back in the rain, opens up the building and loan, and disperses his $2,000 amongst all of the people so that he could keep them afloat. Another sacrifice. Didn't get to go on his honeymoon. He took care of the people there at Bedford Falls through the building and loan company that his dad formed. The next thing that happens is times are getting good for the building and loan. George Bailey is a charismatic, thought-provoking, forward-leading leader, and everything's going great. And so he gives Uncle Billy a deposit. Uncle Billy, you need to make a deposit, friend. Because guess what? Before the deposit is made, Mr. Potter calls up George Bailey. Says, George, I want to offer you a proposition. I want to see if you'd come work for me for $20,000 a year with travel, stay in the finest hotels, just end the building and loan and come on and work for me. And when George seen that Potter had ambitions to stamp out the great work that George Bailey had took over from his dad, he told Potter he could go stuff it. All Potter was a greedy, selfless, selfish man. And he walked out of his office. And the scene transitions to Uncle Billy at the bank. And he has $8,000 that he's supposed to put in the bank, ladies and gentlemen. $8,000. All he had to do was make the deposit. And guess who's in the bank at the same time as Uncle Billy? Of course, the Grinch, Mr. Potter. And Uncle Billy shows the paper of George's brother coming back because they're getting ready to celebrate George's brother coming back from the war as a war hero. Won the Medal of Honor for saving a crew on a boat from a Japanese attack. And they were getting ready to have a great festive time. Uncle Billy's taunting Mr. Potter, and he accidentally puts the $8,000 into Mr. Potter's paper. And when he goes up to the counter to pay for to make the deposit, he can't find the $8,000. Mr. Potter sees the mistake and wheels away with the $8,000. And he comes back to George, back at the office, and says, listen, I don't know what I did with the $8,000. I don't know where I put it. And George is enraged. He's furious. He's like, what do you mean you don't know where you put that $8,000? Do you know that we're getting ready to be audited? The auditors are coming. Do you know the scandal and the fraud and the great shame that's going to be put on the building and loan because of your incompetence? Where is the $8,000, Uncle Billy? Couldn't find it. So here comes George, who had not too long ago told Mr. Potter to stuff it, that he was taking care of his people, giving them a place to stay, a couple rooms and a bath. He had to go back and swallow his pride. Mr. Potter, George Bailey, sitting down dejected. I don't know where I did. I don't know what we did with the $8,000. Can you please help me? I've got a life insurance policy. I got $500 value in it. I'll give you that. And it's up to $15,000 benefits. Mr. Potter said, what's $500 going to do for me as a down payment? He said, you're better off dead than alive, George. Can't find the money. Potter won't loan him anything. Potter calls the cop. George leaves, goes to the bar, gets drunk, angry, furious, upset. He can't believe his whole world is falling apart. The tragedy and the adversity is too much. It's gripping him as a dynamic tentacle around his neck. He doesn't know what else to do. So he drives down the snowy field streets of Bedford Falls, crosses a bridge, and he decides, you know what? I shouldn't even be alive. I'm going to end it all. And George is ready to dive into the icy, frigid waters of Bedford Falls, New York, when he sees an angel. An angel has been sent to George Bailey to get him to think straight. And this angel wants to earn his angel's wings, so he's got to do a good job. So instead of trying to talk to George, he jumps in the water. Because guess what? George was getting ready to jump in the water. But the kind of man that George is, he said, you know what? I see somebody in need. I've got to respond. And he jumped in the water to save this angel. The angel takes George on a dynamic journey of showing him what life would be like had he not been born. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you're listening to me. George Bailey had said, man, it's just better if I wasn't born. Who needs me around anyway? What good have I done in the world? And so the angel says, okay, here's what I'm going to do for you. You were never born, and I'm going to show you what life was like. And we go back in time with his brother, his little brother, Billy. His brother, little brother Billy didn't survive that frigid, icy water experience when he slid on the ice and slid over into the water. Nobody was able to rescue him. George wasn't there. Little Billy died. Uncle Billy he had lost his mind. He became a lunatic after George's dad died, and the building and loan totally went under. He didn't get to work with his Uncle Billy. George came back and seen the town. Instead of it being Bedford Falls, it was now Pottersville. And it was full of nightclubs and raunchy places. And it was a disgrace of a town. It was nothing like it was meant to be. And it was all because George wasn't there. George went to see Mary, his wife. She didn't even recognize him. She didn't know who he was. Everything that George remembered that he had done was all undone without him being there. The transport boat that was saved by his brother fighting in the war never happened. Those soldiers got killed because George never saved his brother. I wonder if we really realize the residual and exponential impact of this life that we live. Many times we allow adversity and we allow trauma and tragedy to define us. In that moment, on that bridge, in the most dejected posture that he could be in, George Bailey said to himself, all the other things that I've done, all the things that I have right now mean nothing because of this $8,000 loss. The adversity is too great. The shame is too strong. The pain is too palpable. And as he looked back over what Bedford Falls turned into without him being there, he realized something. $8,000 or $8 million. I still have my wife. I still have my beautiful children. I still have a town that loves me. I still have a brother that's a war hero. I still have an opportunity to do good, even if I can't find $8,000. He gathers himself up after seeing all of the trauma and seeing people in the grave that should have not been in the grave and seeing how much the town was disheveled and how everything was off kilter because he was never born. And he said, okay, that's enough. I get it. In this story, they call it a contraction. It's a wonderful life. But I want to tell you tonight, so that I don't get sued, it is a wonderful life. I want to put emphasis on it is a wonderful life. Many of us throughout 2020 have experienced dynamic loss, ladies and gentlemen. Many of us have lost jobs. Many of us have lost family members. Many of us have lost motivation, inspiration, health, wellness. Many of us have seen the same agony and diversity, and division and crisis that George Bailey experienced on that bridge. That pain, that agony, that sorrow, that loss. And I imagine that some people out there watching this broadcast tonight are saying to themselves, I've lost too much. I cannot recoup it back. What good is my life going forward? And I say to you, it is a wonderful life. Why? Because you're still in it. See, the story wasn't, it was a wonderful life. The story wasn't about George looking back over his accomplishments or his pedigree or all the things that he did great. It was the story that says, listen, George, you're here now. It is still good. And I want to tell you, all of you watching me from all across the country and around the world, I want to tell you, I don't care what 2020 has dealt us. Take 1 second and take a deep breath in. That is what is feels like. It still is a wonderful life. I still have my family. Man, I may have lost a lot. Things may have not necessarily turned out the way I wanted them to. I may have made some really dumb decisions in 2020, but every time I take a breath, I get to feel what is feels like. You know, the writers of It's a Wonderful Life wanted to make it short and use that contraction to take care of the two words. The contraction is it is, and they put it together with apostrophe I-T-S. It's a wonderful life. But we tonight wanted to take emphasis and make it clear and belabor the point to you that some of you are feeling like, man, if I can just get to 2021, that's not going to add one cubit to your life. Flipping the calendar over means nothing. It is right now still a wonderful life because you're in it. As George Bailey recouped himself and the angel took off the cloak of illusion and let George Bailey get back to himself, his lip was still busted, the car was still wrecked, the snow had still happened, the people remembered him, and he went back home and everybody loved him, even though he went off on his family and screamed and left in a tirade. And he said, you know what? If they're going to come and arrest me, that's okay. I got my family. I got the people surrounding me that love me. And that's all that really matters. As the auditor came in, ready to audit the books, we knew that there was going to be a major deficit in the financial posture of the building and loan. But the townspeople heard of the need, and the word got out. And the word got out that George Bailey, who had helped them before with his wedding money, who had helped them get into homes, who had built up greater neighborhoods than old Potter did, they heard that he had an $8,000 need. And on that night, Christmas Eve night, the cash flowed in far more than the $8,000 bill. His brother came home from the war, a war hero, a decorated hero. And here's what he said to George Bailey as the show began to close. Here's to George Bailey proposing a toast. You're the richest man in town. And they began to sing, "Auld Lang Syne." Auld Lang Syne talks about time. And I want you to know, ladies and gentlemen, we're only loaned this time that we have on earth for a very, very brief moment. It's a loan. It's a loan we have to pay back. The payback is when we leave this earth. But man, the lives we will have touched, the hearts we will have reached. A couple weeks ago, I was low on some funds, which is not uncommon when it's the end of the pay cycle. And there was a lady in the grocery store, and she wanted to go in front of me, and I was actually in front of her, but I let her go ahead. And this old lady was getting her stuff together, and I felt God tell me to talk to her. And I did, and I said, "Oh boy, King, here we go." And as I was talking to her, I realized that it was my job to do something for her. And as she was ringing up her stuff, which was quite significant, I went over there as she was fumbling for her purse, and I stuck my card in the thing and I said, "She's with me." And man, that lady hugged me so tight. I didn't give her my name. I didn't make a recording of it this time. I'll never probably see that lady again. But God only knows what maybe she was feeling that day. Maybe that day was the day she was looking to end it all. Maybe she felt so unappreciated in this world because her hug was a different kind of hug. It wasn't a hug of gratitude. It was a hug of desperation. And I realized that, man, it is a wonderful life. So what? Now my account's down to a couple $1,000 instead of $10,000. So what? My account's down to $50 because I paid for this lady's groceries. Then I had to pay for mine. So what? It's still a wonderful life. I went and got in my car and drove away. It's still a wonderful life. I came back to the home to my beautiful wife and children. It's still a wonderful life. I got to see my animals and my pets. It's still a wonderful life. I'm making connections all across the country and literally around the globe. It's still a wonderful life. And here's what I want to tell you. It's not it's. That's the movie. But I'm talking to you tonight. It is a wonderful life. As you celebrate this season, this time with your family, think about the is. Don't think about the was. Don't even think about what might be. Think about the is, ladies and gentlemen. I hope that I have inspired someone to keep going who may have felt like you didn't have any value left in this world. You do. I want you to know it is a wonderful life. God bless you. Have a good night. Merry Christmas.